Welcome to the autumnal edition of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. I am your host, Philip Michaels.
We haven't changed that much since the last time we recorded. My voice is more deep and muscular and
sonorous and authoritative
and filled with a quavering sense of
outrage.
Yeah.
Philip Michaels. I'm Lisa Schmeiser. We are going to try something exciting and new, and that is a brief half hour format. The idea is the podcast will be just long enough for you to finish doing your dishes, commuting, doing something else, and you won't be like, God, why are these people into 2 hours of talking about Taylor Sheridan movies? Mm. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be back here, Phil. How about you?
It's wonderful.
Yeah. So, Philip, one of the reasons it's been so long between podcasts.
Right.
We have been stupid crazy traveling for the last 2 months.
Yes. Ridiculous amounts of travel. First, I did a lot of travel, and then you did a lot of travel.
Exactly. I had 7 trips in 6 weeks.
That is literally insane.
It was.
I cannot think of a crazier way to spend your life than how you just spent it. And that may be why you sound a little bit froggy, friend.
I'm battling in a case of the airport ick. Yes. Curious. Anyway, as you know, the premise of the show is simple. We talk about movie previews we have seen, and then we talk about movies we have seen.
Yes.
Or other epic filmic entertainments. So, Phil, I want to talk to you about one preview that you and I saw last night.
Yes.
It's the return of Mary Poppins.
The return of Mary Poppins, which I'm a Mary Poppins agnostic in that I don't have any beloved childhood memories about the movie. In fact, I kind of didn't like it as a kid.
Mm.
Just because I found some of the non-Dick Van Dyke, non-Julie Andrews adults in the movie off-putting.
I really loved the sister suffragette song as a child.
Well, that we had different upbringings,
yeah,
but I remember
years denied suffrage to women.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. All right, man, let's vote. We used to say
yes.
in our grade school.
Uh-huh.
But I remember there was a party when I was in the second or third grade, and this was in the days before VCRs. This was in the days where you actually, when you rented a movie, you bought the reel-to-reel.
Oh, wow.
And since I was living in Los Angeles at the time.
So this was like a thing people did.
This was a thing that crazy movie film people did in LA back in the day. And I remember one of my friends had a party and I was invited to it and they showed Mary Poppins. And at the time I was, this is really boring.
Aww.
So that I think colored it in my mind. Now, of course, that we have a child and that she
loved Mary
and that
Poppins.
She spent basically
Much of 2016.
Much of 2016 alternating between that and Frozen. And I prefer, I love Mary Poppins, like Wilson Smith in 1984.
He loved Mary Poppins.
I've come to love Mary Poppins.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about that because there's also, we saw Saving Mr. Banks together. And that's a movie where Tom Hanks lends all of his charisma and fundamental human decency to Walt Disney.
Yes.
So after the special effects department was done with that, you also got solid performances out of Emma Thompson.
It's Walt Disney without the uncomfortable ultra-right views.
Yeah. Well, he helps her heal her heart, and you find out that Mary Poppins was a reaction to her chaotic and tumultuous upbringing with a feckless but charming father and a hyper-worried mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice, I think the best way, but it's the kind of nice middle-grade picture that gets made for Netflix now as opposed to released in theaters.
It's a movie that if you see it on a TV, you go, that's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Which is how I watch it. Brad Whitford does some nice work in it.
Yes, Brad Whitford is Disney's right-hand man.
Colin Farrell is, of course, the feckless father.
It's the only thing I've ever liked BJ Novak in.
Yeah. So anyway, Saving Mr. Banks, A++ in terms of, this is a nice way to spend time. Mary Poppins, if you have a small child, it is a fun movie to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So last night, as Philip and I were watching, I don't even know what we were watching on TV. It doesn't matter. A preview for the return of Mary Poppins came out. With Emily Blunt as the eponymous Mary Poppins. There's a new passel of adorable British tots.
Yep.
And as Bert, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to tell the audience or shall
I? Why don't you tell and I'll jump in if you slander me.
Here's the thing. Phil originally thought it was a Bollywood star. which I think would you did.
You see, Phil is racist and can't identify people.
No, well, to be fair, he's wearing a cap, and you were like, yeah. And Phil's original idea was, oh my God, this is brilliant because it's a nod to Britain's imperial past. It's great that, you know, all types of different citizens of Britain are represented now. And I go, honey, look at the credits, And it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. Here is the thing. Thanks to Lin-Manuel Miranda's Twitter feed, my husband has gone off the aspiring EGOT dude for life. Like, just cannot handle him. It's like your immune system has revolted because every time he crosses your dashboard, like, you begin to tremble.
So here's one of the things. I've never heard the Hamilton soundtrack all the way through.
We own it, but he won't listen to it in the car with us.
And the reason for that is this. I've heard a couple of songs. It's okay. It's not really my bag of tea. Mm-hmm. Not really not my thing, man. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. No one has to record things specifically for me. No. Really. Literally, there is no law until you elect me this mm-hmm. November, and I hope that you will. However, it's one of those things where everyone just loves it so much that you begin to think, wait, now, that this can't be right.
Please apply some critical,
Yeah, this is actually...
So first there was that, and then there was...
To build off of that instance, with Toy Story. Everyone loved Toy Story, and everyone thought Toy Story was great, and I said, oh, I'm very excited. Not Toy Story, The Incredibles. Movie. Mm-hmm. The Incredibles is great, and you should go see The Incredibles. You'll love it. And I said, yes, I will. And I went to go see it, and it was okay. Mm-hmm. And I think I actually didn't like it as much because people
have been hyping it up.
And I fear that Hamilton will be the same way.
This is my Joss Whedon problem, actually, is because people hyped up everything he did. And then when I watch Firefly, which people sob over and love completely, I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's problem number one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Problem number two is...
you hate his Twitter stream.
Well, I don't follow his Twitter stream. It just gets...
But everyone else you know does.
It got tweeted into my timeline a lot. And I've since learned the value of the mute button, and thank you for that. But but for a while, every morning, it was, hey, today's your day to shine.
We can do this.
You're a superstar. The stars aren't in the heavens. They're in you. Hey, Lisa, your eyes are like cups of happiness.
So you have to understand.
I hate sincerity so very much.
Philip is deeply, deeply uncomfortable with sincerity.
Sincerity is so wrong.
We used to watch the signing time videos with our daughter because we communicated pretty much in baby sign language for the first 2 years of her life. And the woman who makes those videos, Rachel Coleman,
is such an earnest, honest, lovely woman.
And she's lovely. I've interviewed her for pieces before, and she's got this mission.
We went to one of her live shows, and she's great.
And she's done remarkable things for lots of people and triumphed over adversity. And like the whole time signing time ruled supreme in our house, Phil was like, there's not a jot of irony. There's not a moment of irony. I don't know if I can handle this much unalloyed sincerity.
There's not a wink to people going, that's okay. The world is still an awful place.
No.
No. And I need that to,
because you
to
wanna
center
make,
me.
Yeah. Because you want reassurance that you're not taking crazy pills, I think.
Exactly.
So anyway, we saw the Mary Poppins preview, and there's dolphins in the bathwater. Mm-hmm. I think it will probably go easier with audiences that have grown up on Disney sequels, especially Disney straight-to-video sequels. Because it turns out there's like a whole thriving market. For example, there's like a Little Mermaid 2 with Ursula's skinnier sister, and there's an Aladdin 2, and all sort. And there's like Lilo and Stitch has launched an entire franchise. So I think for people who are used to the idea that you're in that the specific universe grows over time, they'll be okay with this movie. I was looking at it and I'm like, well, it's no Dick Van Dyke falling over his pants like a penguin.
Which is great.
Yeah.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
I do. I really.
Since I don't really regard the original Mary Poppins as a sacred text, I actually think it'll be okay.
Yeah.
I think it seems like it's in a safe pair of hands. I think Emily Blunt, just from the 30 to 40 seconds we saw of her, seems to have the...
Well, she's magnificent, though.
She's very good, and I've enjoyed her in many, many a thing, and she seems to have a beat on the role.
Yeah.
Bert should be fine, so long as he doesn't turn to the camera and go, hey, they're in the audience. You're all beautiful star children. And now is your time to shine.
Oh, my God.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you're the precocious one.
You really could do this for.
I could. We could do a spinoff podcast.
Yeah, where it's just you doing false affirmations.
Yes, Red Skull's affirmations. You're beautiful inside.
You can see, talk about how
that's the horrible kind of person I am. Here's a guy who just wants to inspire people, and for me, it's me doing my stupid little voice.
Where woke Red Skull is. Yes. Oh, Steve Rogers, why are you so lookist?
There's no I in team. Together, everyone achieves more. Yeah.
So that's the preview we saw. I believe we also saw A Star Is Born in previews. We have not seen
it. Yeah, we sort of did.
We saw the previews. You laughed really hard at the Muppet version of
it. Yes, I did. There's a version that takes the audio track of the A Star Is Born and cues it up to various clips from Muppet projects throughout the years, with, of course, Kermit the Frog in the Bradley Cooper role, Miss Piggy in the Lady Gaga role.
As you would.
And assorted other Muppets popping up along the way.
Right. So let's save future movie previews for future podcasts.
Yes.
And let's launch into what have we been watching movie-wise, Philip?
Okay, well, let's see, on these many
travels.
On these many travels.
I finally saw Blade Runner 2045.
What did you think of that?
It's beautiful and incoherent. Mm-hmm. You know, much like many of the stars of the 2000s. Beautiful and incoherent. Denis Villeneuve has a distinct visual style that I respond to really well. There were some visual stylistic elements I thought you could detect from Arrival to Blade Runner 2045. He's got a mastery of empty space. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a really pretentious thing to say, but it's hard to film in empty space and help you appreciate how and why it's empty. And he does a really good job with that.
Okay.
So I love that. Love the wardrobe. That said, I believe he commented that it's the world's most expensive art film. Mm. And that's pretty much accurate. I think Ryan Gosling is the perfect choice to play a soulless android. And Jared Leto needs to go away for a while because he's a little bit self-impressed at this point.
Yeah.
But, here's the thing. I wish Harrison Ford would stop making movies.
Well, yeah.
I find him deeply depressing to look at.
Yeah, that was my reaction in the Star Wars.
That was the worst. Like, everyone's on, Carrie Fisher needs to lose weight. I'm like, have you checked out Harrison Ford? The moths have eaten him in real time.
Who just sort of, God, they keep forcing me to make movies.
Yeah, like, all he wants to do is just sit in his Santa Barbara house and
fly his plane badly. And,
right on. See, we should all have dreams. Yeah. Anyway, Blade Runner 2045 is beautiful as, like, If I were crazy and rich, I'd have a screen that was like the size of our living room wall, and I would just play movies in the background as living wall, as dynamic wallpaper. Mm-hmm. And that movie would be like number one candidate for that.
Now, not to derail us, but some people that I've heard and respect their opinion on movies had a problem with the portrayal of women in that movie.
Well, here's how
other people have argued, no, it's Denis Villeneuve doing a comment on how women are treated in that society. And
well,
on you go.
So the mental sleight of hand, the sleight of brain that I used to get around that was just to assume that gender was completely irrelevant. Women had simply been oomphed out of existence. Mm. Because that is the depth and perception which is given. That said, the movie makes an argument for the commodification of relationships and the question of authentic connection versus purchased connection.
Right.
And of course, it uses hookers to do that because why not? And when are women not a metaphor for commodity, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you're giving the movie a little bit too much credit. If you're like, no, he's making a commentary. I would actually argue that, again, I think that this world has effectively sidestepped gender as a social construct that bears looking at. And they've basically gotten to a point, and race is honestly not, race is given the same treatment that gender is given this movie. And both of them are rendered irrelevant, relative to money. Like, in his worldview and in the worldview of the movies, it comes down to haves versus have-nots, and all of their distinctions are effectively erased.
Okay.
So, I mean, that said, it's just, you're like, another space hooker, really?
Mm. Now I want to do a script treatment called Another Space Hooker.
Well, if we get to the point where we're finally crowdsourcing space flight, I fully expect there to be some sort of, alt fetish group that manages to raise millions and get up there first.
Elon Musk is on it, baby. I'm
sure he is.
So to run through the movies that I've seen on planes recently, I finally saw 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, so that I can now board that time machine and argue with people back in early 2018, late 2017. I did not care for it. I liked Frances McDormand's performance. It is justifiably praised.
You raved about Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson is very good in that movie. Did not care for Sam Rockwell's performance, who for one part is it's a problematic character who gets a
he's like the rehabbed racist, right?
He gets a redemption arc that is not earned at any point in the movie, and Sam Rockwell plays him as half an idiot through most of the movie, and yet he's the guy who kind of cracks the case.
But this is
spoiler alert, I guess, for
those
of you who've seen it before.
Remind me who the director is again.
The director is Martin McDonagh.
We just finished in Bruges. How much of a parallel between Sam Rockwell's character and Colin Farrell's character do you see?
I would say they if he were a Venn diagram, it would nearly be a perfect circle.
So basically, Martin McDonagh has a soft spot for half-wit characters that inadvertently stumble into greater moral truths.
Yes, I would say that is a fair assessment. And I would also say that Martin McDonagh couldn't end a movie.
Well, that was my next question.
Drew him a map to the ending.
Well, that's my next question was in Bruges. My biggest complaint about was how badly the ending was telegraphed. Yeah. Because is like that with 3 billboards.
A little bit. A little bit. And my go-to line with In Bruges is to tell people to shut off the movie with 20 minutes left and then imagine the ending, because you'll probably come up with a better one than Martin McDonagh did. He's really gifted with a line, but in terms of getting point A to point B storytelling.
He also benefits from coaxing good performances out of actors,
quite
too.
True.
So that's part of it as well.
We really enjoyed Brendan Gleeson's performance in
Ralph Fiennes is hilarious.
Ralph Fiennes is great in that movie. Yeah. And as I said, Frances McDormand, Woody Harrelson, Clark Peters has a very tiny role.
I saw that over someone's shoulder on the plane.
And he's great in it. Yeah. Peter Dinklage has a very good role in it, where he just really gets to flex some acting muscles without dragons flying around. So that's it.
Yeah. We've liked Peter Dinklage since The Station Agent.
Sure we have.
Yeah.
I wanted to like that movie more than I did, but I just really am kind of aghast that was considered an Oscar front runner. Movies that I like that I saw on planes, Edge of 17, with Woody Harrelson. I'm just working my way through his latter catalog here.
Mm-hmm. We'll get you to watch The Hunger Games yet.
He's really good in that. The actress Haley
Steinfeld?
Yeah, she's quite good in that.
Yeah.
The script is pretty good. There's a little bit too much seeing your value in whether the boys like you that I didn't care for, but there was enough promising stuff there that I can overlook that. I think my most major complaint in the movie is that the teens are all cut like steaks.
Yeah.
They don't have
stringy teenage bodies. They have Hollywood bodies.
These teens who are supposedly awkward and socially outcast. There's this boy who's very awkward along the near the Haley Stanfield character. And at one point they're going swimming and he takes off his shirt and he could grate cheese on his abs. And son, you are not the least bit. You don't have the least bit of problem with the ladies.
No, he would just have to open an Insta with my 8-pack.
Exactly.
Would be it.
Yeah. So, otherwise, an enjoyable movie once you can suspend the disbelief that any of these teenagers spends 1 minute with doubt and anxiety. And then I also saw The Gringo on a plane, which is terrible. And
why?
Very misogynistic.
Oh,
I don't want this to be the theme of, well, Phil, I think that it's great that you're expressing your attitude. Yes, thank you. But no, every female character in that movie is awful.
Am I here to burnish your glory?
Yeah. Or
am I the trophy you win?
Or they're nasty and deserve to be punished.
Oh, you know what? That actually leads me right into a thing that we wanted to talk about, which is what you and I were watching over the summer and into the fall.
Yeah. But anyhow, no chuckles to be had in that. Yeah. And I forget the Joel Edgerton. Not a fan of his work.
I'm not a fan of his work at all.
At all.
I mean, he doesn't have the same slappable face as Miles Teller.
Yeah.
But I've never seen Joel Edgerton in something like, oh, it's Joel Edgerton. I was like, Oh, okay. Here we go.
Yeah, in the part that he plays, you need more of a rogue that you like in spite of the fact that he's terrible, and he's just terrible in it.
So it's an Alden Ehrenreich role.
Yeah. So do not see The Gringo. That is my advice to you.
Yeah, so we were talking about works of entertainment in which the women are reduced to paper-thin caricatures ascribed a trait, and that's what substitutes for characterization. And Phil, you and I got hooked on a TV show this summer that had the potential to be good and instead turned into something that was so compulsively watchable because we were like, how will it fail this week?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like watching a YouTube compilation of NASCAR car crashes, except it was set ostensibly in Montana.
Yes.
And every week we couldn't wait to see how it was going to screw up.
Would you care to name this
I would. Show? It's called Yellowstone. Yes. Taylor Sheridan is responsible for the show. He wrote and launched it. I believe he directed some episodes.
For those of us who are not familiar with Taylor Sheridan, what is his CV?
So he did Sicario. Mm-hmm. He did Hell or High Water, mm-hmm. which I adore as a movie, mostly for the performances and some for the statement of how radically stratified American economies are becoming. And I also really liked Wind River, which does a little bit of that romanticizing the High Plains self-sufficiency mythos. But again, it's a nuanced look at the exploitation that happens in a predominantly extractive economy, meaning that when people come in and strip a land of its resource, the people who are already on that land are going to get screwed coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor Sheridan did a great nuanced job with this. So I had high hopes for Yellowstone because it's about a rancher who is trying to deal with the seismic changes that are sweeping across Montana as an influx of outside the state money comes in, an influx of recreational tourists, as opposed to the ranchers and miners and hunters who've always lived there, culture clashes and a lot more transparency expected. It's an unusual culture shift for this state. And I thought, well, if it's anybody who can do it, he's done a great job of like even pointing out these issues exist. What happens when he has the vast canvas of a TV series on which to paint his statement?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is he does a lot of tiny series, tiny disappointing watercolors every week.
I think the problem is he's just not comfortable with the medium of television.
Yeah.
Where you have to have things happen every week.
No, because every episode was like
happen in the service of a larger story.
Yeah, because every episode was like 45 minutes of place setting and then 3 minutes of action that made no sense, despite the fact that you would set it up for 45 minutes.
Yeah, just crazy. And then this happens and then that happens.
Yeah. And one of the reasons it was both entertaining and frustrating is because you could watch many of the actors trying to do their best with the material.
Right.
Like Kevin Costner is very good in this series.
It plays to his strengths. I would disagree with you there.
Really?
I've been thinking about this. I think the problem with having Kevin Costner in the lead, and clearly he's in the lead because that got everything greenlit.
Yeah.
Because Kevin Costner is involved. Okay.
Oh, he's done Dances with Wolves.
Take all our money, says the struggling Paramount Network.
Yeah.
But the problem with Kevin Costner is I think he does best in roles where, again, he's a little scruffy around the edges, but deep down inside, he's okay.
He's a feckless charmer?
Yeah, he's a feckless charmer. Right. Your Bull Durhams, your Tin Cups, that movie you like.
Oh, I forget about
Something of Anger.
The Upside of Anger.
Upside of Anger.
I was like, it's the Joan Allen Drinks a Lot movie.
Joan Allen Drinks a Lot, yes. Much better title.
Yes.
Whereas movies where he has to play a cad, as he does in Yellowstone.
See, I
wanted to call it Jellystone.
I disagree with your characterization. I disagree with your characterization as a cad.
He's not a good guy.
But this is the genius of casting him, is because you get Kevin Costner and he presents as this exemplar of American virtue, and then you realize that actually he embodies the seamy underside of how the West was actually won.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really enjoyed that juxtaposition.
Mm.
And I was really, I think what disappointed me the most were there were some very interesting themes spun out. For example, Wes Bentley plays one of the scions of the ranch, and he's much more polished, and he is a lawyer, so he's city slickering, and he's also effectively hamstrung because his dad won't hand him much responsibility. I thought that was a really interesting theme that they could have done a whole lot more with.
Mm. No, that was probably my favorite subplot of that show.
Yeah.
My least favorite is the crazy sister, crazy daughter.
Yes.
Daughter of Kevin Costner, sister to Wes Bentley.
She's played by Beth Riley, who some people on The Incapable probably know as Mrs. Watson on the Sherlock show.
Mm.
And I have a Beth Riley story to tell you in a moment. But okay. Anyway, no, Beth is the name of the character. It's Kelly Riley. There we go. So Kelly Riley plays her. She's also on Sherlock. Beth is...
This is the joke.
Anyway, Beth is...
There's that explicit tag.
Anyway, Beth is basically... Beth is like if a red pill subreddit wrote what they thought career women were going to be like.
Yeah.
No, she's cruel. She's castrating. She's a slattern. She's calculating. She's manipulative. Her only genuine emotion is her ability to go sit in a closet and scream every night at 9 o'clock.
And
I'm not kidding. This is actually how one episode ends. Is like she watches Kevin Costner feeding her nephew and his grandson like cookies, and like she takes one look and stalks off to a closet and begins screaming. And like the thing is, everyone around the house is like, "This is totally normal."
That was my favorite reaction.
Time for the 9 p.m. shriek-a-thon.
Was as she's shrieking. The other characters sort of like acknowledge that she's shrieking and go, yeah, that's going on.
Yeah.
That's a thing that's happening.
What are you going to do? Every night at 9, she screams for an hour.
We need to get more acoustical tiling in our ranch house.
So it was frustrating because you had a lot of interesting big themes that I do think deserve wider airing, especially right now in entertainment. We don't need a whole bunch of movies about heroic cops and firefighters and soldiers and this and all the other. Let's look at the people who are struggling with what it means to live in a 21st century world. And let's look at people who are doing jobs that are essentially unchanged for hundreds of years and see how they're handling it. And I loved this about Taylor Sheridan's movies, and I'm disappointed to see that he couldn't carry it through on TV.
Mm.
Anyway, but you know, if you want to watch bad TV because you enjoy seeing what's wrong with everything, like totally fine Yellowstone.
And it's coming back for a second season probably
next year.
Summer on the Paramount Network. And I don't know what that used to be. It was a rebrand.
Freeform, I think?
No, Freeform is the former ABC Family, former Christian Broadcast Network.
Was it some dude channel?
It was some dude channel, like True TV.
Or something like that.
Or Versus.
Can tell that we stream most of our entertainment now because we have not even bothered to keep
up. I don't know what cable channels are named anymore.
Phil, are there any movies you're looking forward to watching this weekend?
Are there any movies I'm looking forward to
watching? What's on your DVR?
What's on my DVR? Well, I'm currently making my way through The Best Years of Our Lives, which I'm not enjoying probably as much as I should because, A, it's very long, and it's very post-World War II soap opera-y, which it's not
one. How did you like Some Came Running?
I did not like Some Came Running.
See, I think this is why you're not going to
like this. And
there's that whole spate of like 1950s, what does it mean to come back from the war? Why aren't the women hopping back in line movies?
This is also reminding me of Giant, which is another movie which is very much, has very soap opera stuff and is big and epic and sprawling. And that just leaves me cold.
Yeah.
So I'm unfortunately, I don't think this is, this is going to pan out for me.
Aww.
I am also watching a bunch of old George Sanders movies. He used to do The Saint.
Yes.
And these are these little disposable 90 minutes at most movies where it's just him going around being arch and charming. And
I really enjoy that.
I very much enjoy them. And plus, they're fun and disposable. And I wish there were more movies like that, where it's just someone creates a character and they come and do the
they have their little shows, their little antics.
And there's no little like Saint universe that you have to worry about.
There's not 18 films that lead up to a crossover.
In a way, it's kind of like the Mission Impossible franchise. Back in the 40s, because the nice thing about the Mission Impossible franchise is you can dip in and out.
Yeah,
you really don't need to see every movie. Mm-hmm. There are not fantastic man babies on Twitter and Reddit complaining they've ruined Mission Impossible. I'll never look at Ethan Hunt again.
Oh Lord!
So in a way, it's the perfect series, and I sort of. Look at series like the Saint and Bulldog Drummond and the Thin Man, kind of like in that spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Well, I look forward to wandering in and out of the room as you work your way through all those movies.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Phil, thank you so much for co-hosting.
Hey, Lisa, I just want to say, don't chase the rainbow. You are the rainbow.
I am. Don't forget it.
Yes, ma'am.